Hey, Drew.
Hey, John.
Okay, have a seat. I'm just going to ask you a series of questions, okay?
Okay.
Try not to move, all right?
I already took an IQ test.
I know. It's not that kind of test, Drew.
Okay.
Just relax and answer the questions, all right. Okay?
Okay.
All right. It's the future.
Okay.
And you are an android.
Okay.
Do you dream of electric sheep?
What kind of sheep are they?
It's not that kind of test, Drew. I'm John.
And I'm Drew.
And you're listening to The Hourchive.
Our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time. Oh, okay. We're doing the third movie of our 1982 celebration.
Retrospectacle.
Our 1982 retrospectacle.
Oh, that's good.
That's really good.
Thanks.
I wish we'd come up with that at the beginning.
A lot. Yeah,
but
earlier.
We can go back and like...
We can edit in there. We can just...
Yeah. Retrospectacle.
Retrospectacle. Retrospectacle.
Yeah.
We need a theme song for the retrospectacle.
Man. Well, we'll get one for next year's 1983 retrospectacle.
Yeah, because 1983 that was a retrospectacular year.
Yeah. It's the third episode of the retrospectacle.
Mm-hmm. On 1982.
On 1982.
The movies of 1982.
It was my turn to choose a movie.
And you made an interesting choice. I mean, some people might say it's a very pedestrian choice, but
wow,
I think it's interesting coming from you and knowing what other movies are available from 1982.
Yeah. Well, I chose Blade Runner. I had never seen it.
Which is...
I told you that, didn't I?
Yeah. Well, I think you said you weren't sure that you had seen it.
I tried to watch it once.
Mm-hmm.
And turn it off pretty quickly. But I watched the whole thing this time.
Good. We should probably specify, too, that the version that we watched...
The final cut.
Yeah, which was released in 2007, according to info.
Yeah, information.
And this is about the 14th cut of Blade Runner, I think, that's been released.
I think it actually is the 7th.
Wow.
Because there was, well, the thing is, I looked this up. There was a rough cut that was released at one point. And this was a cut that I guess Ridley Scott put together prior to release, which I guess you could get on VHS at one point. You know, like a, not legally. It was
it was a bootleg.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
There's a theatrical release. Excuse me, which is regarded as the worst version because it has narration that apparently Harrison Ford did not want to do.
Yeah, nobody wanted to do
it. It's evident.
People didn't want to hear it.
Yeah, and it's evident in the narration itself.
Have you heard the narration?
I found a clip on YouTube.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It is.
Yeah. It also had a different ending. We'll get to that.
Oh,
but
yeah, I think I remember. Oh, yeah. Wait, the theatrical had a different...
The theatrical had a different ending, yeah.
There is the director's cut, which he got rid of the narration.
Yeah, changed the ending.
Yeah. There's the... Maybe there's only five, because then there's the final cut, which is the most recent one. The director's cut came out in the 90s.
Yeah, I think so. But I feel like there was even another cut. Maybe like, there was like a final cut. Like they when they released it on video, the
07
final cut.
07 is the latest one. The one that came out in 07, right? Okay. Final cut.
That was the final cut.
That's the most recent one.
I feel like there's like a home video version of that has like different scenes.
Maybe there
or
is.
Some kind of tweak to it or something.
There's an international cut.
Oh.
There's something that went out in Europe or Japan or something, I think.
Okay.
That has some variations. Oh, it's bloodier. Or there's a cut I can't remember if it's an international cut or if it's the U.S. cut, but there's a cut that came out that is bloodier. Like, it has more violence.
Violence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not necessarily, like, that was inserted. He just sort of... There was stuff he pulled out, I guess.
Right, right. It was cut from the U.S. version, but it didn't need to be cut for the international audiences.
But we watched the final cut, which... From what I read, is regarded as the best cut.
It's pretty good. I've seen the director's cut, and I've seen portions of the theatrical cut.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the final cut works. I don't really notice a whole lot of difference between the director's cut and the final cut.
I know that in the final cut, he had Harrison Ford's son shoot a new scene. It was just basically something quick he inserted into a scene, and you only see Deckard from afar, so it works.
Huh. Well, I wonder which scene that is. I'll have to look that up.
I think it's the scene at... Well, I guess before we get into that, this kind of stuff, we're going to spoil Blade Runner a lot in this
but,
episode.
But, I mean, come on. It's 30 years.
I didn't know anything.
30 years on, you should go see Blade Runner.
But I have managed to avoid spoilers my entire life.
Which is impressive.
Of this movie.
Yeah, good job.
It's the scene where he's chasing, Deckard is chasing, what's her face? The snake girl.
Zora.
And he shoots her and she crashes through all the panes of glass. And then it cuts to him sort of approaching after all that has happened. And I think that particular shot is, his son, Harrison Ford's son.
Ridley Scott's kind of a weirdo.
Yeah.
I mean, I like him. He's a likable weirdo, but
all right,
he's kind of a weirdo.
Let's get down to it.
So you'd never seen it. You tried to watch it
once.
You turned it off.
Yeah.
Why?
I was bored from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I was a youth and didn't. I had a lot.
How old do you mean by teenager?
Like 15, 16, maybe.
Hmm.
And I had a lot better things to do. There were better movies to watch. I didn't have time for this, you know.
You had to go see The Mask.
Yeah,
I did. Exactly. Rookie of the Year.
The Rookie of the Year just come out. I'm a Daniel Stern fan, and I had to go see it.
Uh-huh.
When did you first see Blade Runner?
I was around 15, I think. I went through a period. I think I found a book. I got this book when I was like 14 or 15, and it was all like cult movies.
Mm-hmm.
It was The Video Hound Guide to Cult Movies or something like that.
Excellent title.
So yeah, it's great.
You must have been in heaven.
I love that book.
This book's for me.
I did. I like pored over every page.
Yeah.
And because it was full of all these
what
movies.
Are some other greats in that book?
Over the Edge was the biggest find. That's my favorite movie of all time, and I found out about it through this book.
I don't think I know that one.
Blue Sunshine, sort of an offbeat one that was in there. THX 1138.
I gotta say, this is like a legit. They're not like saying they're not listing movies that everyone knows about as cult movies. Yeah. Like these are like legit.
They are. I mean, I feel like they were mostly well known among cult movie people.
Yeah, but
still, they weren't like. Yeah.
Especially now, there's like this striation. I think I'm using that right. Of movie cult moviegoers where due to the internet and due to the way that niche things are becoming very popular in the mainstream and can get a lot of exposure, there's
a hunger for stuff like that. I think you could
claim there are casual cult film goers. There are hardcore cult film goers, you know, they're like that. And that book to me, probably at the time, I mean, that I think at when you're, you know, 15, there's really only hardcore cult moviegoers. You can't really be casual about it because it's hard to find that stuff unless you're digging, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was the kind of thing where even at that time, I would say there was some segregation because there were some movies in that book that were very easy to find. Dawn of the Dead was on video at every video store.
Yeah.
You know, but like, that's like Over the Edge, you know, I had to kind of look for, or Well, in this case, you know, Blade Runner was in it, and Blade Runner was everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I could easily get my hands on a copy of Blade Runner. Evil Dead is another good one, where, like, Evil Dead, it, at the time, was a pretty cult movie. Now everybody sort of knows what Evil Dead is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or Pulp Fiction. You know, that's the kind of thing where, like, it, that was... I would not call that a cult movie, but I think a lot of people today would call it a cult movie.
Okay.
Because it has sort of a following. I guess a cult movie sort of has a following.
That's the thing, yeah. I guess we have... Maybe I'm mistaking cult with underground.
Yeah. Yeah, because you could... I think you can be a cult movie and not be underground. I wouldn't call Blade Runner underground.
I suppose usually things with a cult following are not in the mainstream.
Yeah. And those lines have blurred
gradually
over the last 20 years, I guess. Yeah. So cult movie book, Blade Runner. I'm going through it movie by movie.
Yeah,
in alphabetical order. No, I'm not. but I did go through it. I would go through it once and I would be like, okay, I want to see this, 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 this. I make a list.
Yeah.
I'd see all those movies and then I'd go through it again and I'd be like, ooh, I want to see this one now and I want to see this one.
Did you see all of them?
Probably not, but I saw a lot of them. I mean, I feel like this was like my mission. This was what I did as a teenager.
Still unfulfilled.
There's a few out mission there that I've never seen.
Not accomplished. But
and instead, you made me watch Blade Runner again.
You watched Blade Runner at
Director's cut. Yeah.
And how did you feel about it?
I thought it was cool. I didn't love it, but I thought it was... I understood why it was a cult movie. How about that? Yeah. You know, I could get why it had a following. I didn't necessarily want to be a part of that following.
You weren't looking for your membership.
Right, yeah. I wasn't longing to dream of electric sheep. I wasn't. But I did... I had not read the book. So the Blade Runner is based on the book.
Right.
Do androids dream of electric sheep? I guess it's Philip a short K. story. Dick. Yeah, or a novella by Philip K. Dick, and I had never read it before. But through the movie, found out about the book, started reading Philip K. Dick, and he is sort of I would classify him as like a cult writer. You know, a cult.
He's
author.
Interesting.
I
struggle with Philip K. Dick.
I do too. I don't particularly love any of his stuff, but I respect. You know, he does his own thing. And there's really not a whole lot out there that I consider like him.
I watched it. I watched the whole thing.
Before you go there.
Yeah.
I was 15. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
I watched it again when I was like 18.
Okay.
And I was like, well, this is a badass movie.
All right.
And I watched it again when I was like 23.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, Blade Runner kicks ass.
Yeah.
So and I... continuously
you're getting it's getting better
I
for
like
you.
It more and more the older I get and the more I watch it I like it more and more.
So what was so watching it now at in your 30s
mm-hmm.
your how did it feel?
I think it's fantastic.
Again, it's gotten better for you.
It has, and there are moments that I remember always liking or always remember liking.
You always remember liking these moments.
I like these moments
that you like.
There are moments that I have remembered from previous viewings.
From viewing number one.
Right.
You've always liked that moment.
Yeah. Those moments. Yeah. So, for example, when the police chief is going through all of the escaped replicants and he gets to Daryl Hannah's character,
standard pleasure
Pris.
Model.
And she's your basic pleasure model. I love that reference. Huh. I love that the way he delivers that line and the actual line itself. Have stuck with me. But then there are other moments that you know that I guess they don't resonate with me until I've watched it a couple of times. I never thought that Rutger Hauer's soliloquy at the end was you know anything special until. Like one or two viewings ago.
Okay.
And when I saw it that time, I was like floored by it. In between that viewing and this one, I saw this, the final cut in the theater. It was released for a little while. And that was the last time I saw this movie before sitting down to watch it for the show. And in between those times, I don't know what I was reading, but something I started thinking about that speech, and I started thinking about like what, how does that fit into the context of the movie? Because I guess up until this point, I really didn't look at any kind of thematic value in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, I was pretty much just looking at it as like, it's a straightforward story, and it's all about Deckard and, you know, his deal. You know, I didn't really put much value in Rutger Hauer's character.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he was just sort of there to give Deckard something to do. In my initial viewings of the movie. And so then after seeing it a couple of times and thinking more and more about it, it really came around to me how Rutger Hauer is really sort of the heart of the movie. So every time I see it, I like it more. And this time there were scenes, there's some great stuff with Harrison Ford running through that building, the Bradbury building, the apartment when he's sort of chasing and being chased by
Roy Blatt.
Roy Blatty.
Is that his name?
I think it's Blatty.
Roy. Blatt,
whatever. Rutger Hauer's character. Yeah, there's some great, like, just really, I mean, they're artsy. They're a little over artsy, I guess some might say. But they just, it really works. I don't know what it is.
As I was watching it, I was trying to figure out why people liked it. Mm-hmm. And I was very focused on the style. And I thought the soundtrack was awful. and I tried to shake that off because I think it was a result of the time it was made.
Uh-huh. The soundtrack meaning like the
score,
audio levels. Okay, the score.
Sorry, the score. I felt was
Vangelis,
just gross for the most part. And I fell asleep at one point. I'll be totally honest. I fell asleep. I can't remember when, but for like a couple minutes, and then I had to sit up. Because it was putting me to sleep. So I'm watching the movie and I'm just sort of like, the opening scene I thought was great. The opening scene with Leon and the Blade Runner. The
Van Kampf test.
Except for like the bad editing at the very end of that scene when I like suddenly the guy went through a wall and then he stood up and shot him.
Yeah. You're not clear.
It was so shot weird. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was so jarring, and I was like, wait, it took me completely out of that scene, unfortunately, which I thought was a great scene up until that point. But the whole movie, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't understand. And then it got to the final sequence with the chase, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is so boring. Like Rutger Hauer is insane all of a sudden in a weird way. Mm-hmm. I don't understand any of his actions. And then it gets to the final, not the final, but the penultimate, perhaps the climax, the
confrontation.
And he gives a soliloquy, and I was floored. And I was like, that is amazing. Rutger Hauer just like knocked it out of the park. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was incredibly stirring to me. That one scene.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, in the movie now, end it now. Nothing else matters. Just end the movie now. But then it, you know, it goes back to Deckard looking for.
He goes back to his apartment. Rachel? Yeah.
And it's, you know, what you were talking about earlier is kind of funny, like the how when you originally watched the movie, you felt like, you know, the replicants that were kind of just a way to give Deckard something to do. Mm-hmm. I felt like Deckard was the most boring part of the movie. Mm-hmm. And the replicant stuff, though absurd at times, especially with, like, Pris's attack on Deckard, which I was just like, what is going on?
With the thigh squeeze.
Yeah. Well, and it wasn't, the first thigh squeeze was fine, but then she jumps off of him and runs away to get a running start to do the same exact move to him. And I was annoyed by the stupidity of that.
Hmm.
You know, there were a few parts where I was like, logically, that made no sense mm-hmm. for the character to do that. Like, Leon should have just killed Deckard, you know, uh-huh. in their confrontation. I didn't see that went on too long to me.
Uh-huh.
And then Pris shouldn't have jumped off of him when she could have killed him right yeah. then and there, and then got a running start to do the same thing and get shot. But I felt like the replicants were infinitely more interesting than Deckard. I thought Harrison Ford just kind of like napped his way through the movie. Edward James Olmos was awesome.
Yeah.
He just looked awesome.
Yeah.
Was he a Blade Runner?
I don't know. His character's hard to figure.
Well, and this is the thing. So I watched the movie, right? The most of the movie, I'm just kind of like perplexed. Mm-hmm. And then the scene with Rucker Hauer at the end happens, and it's beautifully shot, and it's incredibly well acted, and you know the writing is superb mm-hmm. at that moment. And I was like, that was awesome. That was worth watching the movie mm-hmm. to get to this point. That made it worth it. And after I finished the movie, I was kind of like, you know, I was like, I see it. I see why people get behind this movie. I see the cult following. It has everything you want, you know,
mm-hmm.
it has all the trappings. It's got, you know, weird sort of, Asian America, Los Angeles and the future. It's got little, genetic toy soldiers that this guy made, which I could have used more of, to be honest. You know, it felt very Escape from New York, and it felt very Star Wars, and it had all these, you know, kind of felt like it was pulling, whether, you know, whether they came out before or after not, yeah. or whatever, right? I could see all the different strings that kind of made this work as a film that people loved.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, for me, it didn't do it. But I have to say that I've been thinking about it since I watched it
mm-hmm.
and trying to parse things out. And that has elevated it in my estimation.
Mm-hmm.
In that the fact that I'm still thinking about it 2 days later, for those 2 days, I think there's got to be something there.
Yeah.
You know, beyond just a weird movie, like there's something I'm missing and that I'm trying to find, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it might be, you know, part of that might be just having heard all these years how good it is. And it might just be me saying, okay, what did I miss?
Yeah. Why is this working yeah. for other people and not working for me?
But I do think that there's something to it that is sort of obscured when you first watch it. There's so much spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much style.
It is style laden and it's thick.
I would assume that's all you can see on the first time.
Yeah, I could see that.
It was hard for me to get past
mm-hmm.
just the face of the movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to watch it again and try to see what I get from it on a second viewing. But I do wish that there was a lot more with the replicants and with Roy in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Deckard is an interesting character. But I can't really figure... I could not find... There's so little known about him. And I know what one of the alternate endings is.
Mm-hmm.
And what potentially Deckard is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps why his past is not ever investigated in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not enough for me.
I think I had the thought, so the past that you allude to that I'm going to spoil right here.
Here we go.
And I think this is interesting because...
Can I...
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't like this. I'm trying to word my sort of... I don't like that this is a thing, but go on.
You don't like that what is a thing?
This is a mystery.
This possibility or this concept?
I'm annoyed that this is a discussion or that it's, you know...
That it's a focal point for people?
Yeah, that bothers me.
I kind of agree too, because the big debate that I grew up knowing was, and I think I feel like this was even alluded to, I guess in a way I was sort of spoiled on this by reading about it before seeing the movie. But so the premise that is implied by the director's cut and the final cut, not so much in the original theatrical version, but the implication of the quote unquote definitive cuts is that Deckard may or may not be a replicant himself.
Right.
That wasn't the case. The original movie ended with he and Rachel escaping the city and they're driving through mountains and it's a very upbeat ending. Yeah. And it didn't have any of the dream sequences that the later versions have.
Right.
And those dream sequences...
The unicorn?
Yeah. Are awesome. I almost can't imagine liking this movie in its original form because I feel like I've seen movies like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have seen movies that were to me what that version of Blade Runner would have been. And I'm thinking of like AI or Gattaca, just movies that were so full of promise and I just felt kind of went nowhere with it. And I feel like that original cut of Blade Runner does that.
What are the other dream sequences?
Well, it's the same. It's the recurring unicorn.
Does it happen more than once?
I think it happens twice. Okay. Yeah.
And then there's the unicorn.
And then the origami. Yeah. Origami. Which is, I guess, is supposed to suggest that
he is a replicant.
He's a replicant. And that's him realizing that he's a replicant when he sees that. It's like the acknowledgement that they know he's a replicant. Yeah. That Edward James Olmos character knows he's a replicant. And he acknowledges that he has a limited time to live, you know.
Right.
Which I, in a way, I feel like it's almost not ambiguous enough. Because to me, there's no question about that version of the movie. Deckard is a replicant.
Okay.
Now, that was the debate coming out of the director's cut throughout the 90s was, is he or isn't he? Mm-hmm. And I think you're right that it's stupid that that is even a debate.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there is a much deeper theme in this movie and a much more meaningful theme and question that should be the heart of any Blade Runner discussion. And it's not. It's ignored because people are so worried about whether or not Harrison Ford is a robot.
God, that is so cool. I just enjoyed you saying that.
I think...
The whether or not he is a replicant is completely negated by Edward James Olmos' statement of it's too bad she won't live, but then again,
who does?
Who does?
Right.
It doesn't, and that's the, to me, like that kind of wraps that whole idea up. That idea in the movie of, you know, they live for 4 years and that's it. And, you know, they're either fighting it or accepting it or what have you, but it doesn't matter if you're a replicant or a human. You know, Edward James Olmos tells us everyone dies.
Right.
You know,
just because your time is more limited than a human's doesn't make that time any less significant, which is, I think, what the movie
that's what it's ultimately about.
Is saying. Yeah. It's, you know, it doesn't matter how long you're here. It's sort of, you know, all of everything is ultimately meaningless from one perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if all that you are valuing, if you are saying that the most important thing you have is a memory, then
whether real or not.
Right.
Whether implanted or
right. Yeah. Not. I feel like the movie's sort of making an argument against putting too much value on things that are ultimately fleeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I love, part of the reason why I love Rutger Hauer's speech mm-hmm. is, you know, all of the memories that Rachel talks about and Deckard talks about mm-hmm. all involve these very personal moments. Mm-hmm. You know, they're she's talking about the time, like the wasp's nest or something, or the spider eggs or whatever it was.
Right.
You know, and how it affected her as a person, and Roy gets up there, and he's like, "I've seen, you know, these cosmic things,
right.
you know, and they're all only as valuable as the tiny, most insignificant memories you have, because they're all gone now, you know, and that, I guess." The pessimistic view of that,
mm-hmm.
and I have a point that I want to make after this. Yeah. So the pessimistic view of that is that all of this stuff that we value so much is really ultimately worthless.
Yeah.
And why are we worrying about it?
Right.
The optimistic view of that is that you can look at that and say, all right, I am not going to live forever, you know, mm-hmm. and ultimately I'm going to die. But I can do all of these things, mm-hmm. you know, before then, you know, I can do anything, which is why I consider the ending of the movie to be a positive ending, because Deckard and Rachel basically are, I guess Deckard especially, you know, he acknowledges that he's a robot. He's going to die soon.
Mm-hmm.
And then he nods. He shakes his head in affirmation, and then he gets the hell out of there.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, well, I'm not going to wait around here feeling sorry for myself anymore. I'm going to go live with this chick robot, and we're going to do whatever we can do until we die.
Whatever robots do.
Right.
Yeah.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Ten Hauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time. Like tears.
So I think it's a fantastic statement, and I think that discussion about what makes us human, like, is it our memories that make us human, mm-hmm. or is it what we choose to do with the limited time we have? I find that way more interesting than whether or not Deckard is a robot.
Yeah.
And whether or not it's more interesting if he is and more interesting if he isn't, because I don't think it matters.
It's the same. You should draw the same conclusion regardless of his status as a replicant.
Exactly.
Because whether he's got 3 more years to live or whether he's got 40 more years to live.
Yeah. If he doesn't do anything with that time, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Either way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that it gets tied up in that. And there's there seems to be a trend, and maybe it's only a two movie trend with Ridley Scott of removing or leaving in critical information. Well, maybe not critical information, but information that either creates ambiguity or illuminates it with Prometheus.
Yeah. There are a lot of similarities.
Yeah. Between Prometheus and Blade Runner. Well, I think I remember reading somewhere someone was like, Prometheus feels like a prequel to Blade Runner.
It kind of does. Actually, the more, as we were just talking about this now, I'm starting to feel like Prometheus feels more like it has more in common with Blade Runner than it does with
absolutely.
Alien.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think.
And the reception to it, I think, is similar.
Well, I think, and so maybe now we should say we may spoil Prometheus. But I think that Prometheus to me is like Blade Runner in space. So the closest link it has to Aliens, the Alien series, is the sort of the physical things of it. Right? But as far as the philosophy and the themes, it's much more related to Blade Runner.
Blade Runner-y.
But what I was going to say, drawing parallel between this and Prometheus, I believe this has been confirmed by Ridley Scott, but apparently he cut from the script, at least, if not from the movie. I don't know if he ever filmed any of this stuff. But there was a part of the script that alluded to the fact, or simply stated, that the reason the architects, I think they're called?
Engineers.
Yeah. Are angry at humans is because they sent an engineer to Earth as to help.
To, like, make contact and...
And be like, hey, what's up? Stop being jerks to each other.
Right.
That engineer... we would later name Jesus, and we killed him, and so the engineers are pissed that we killed him.
Right.
Right? That well, we, or maybe that we not, sort of slapped him in the face,
not,
right?
Not maybe, like, pissed, but I think more like, okay, there's no hope for us at this point. I think that's the impression that I got from it, was that it wasn't that they were acting in spite so much as they were writing us
I
off.
I would say it's an angry write-off, though.
Maybe.
Because, you know, his... when that engineer wakes up, he's viscerally angry.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? He's like, oh, humans. Right?
Basically, so, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, yeah. So that, to me, that and then that the discussion for Prometheus becomes, is that, you know, did they send Jesus?
Right. Yeah.
When that's not what's important about, I don't know what's important about Prometheus, but it's not that. And I liked Prometheus, but maybe not for the reasons that Ridley Scott wanted me to like it. But that to me is not the discussion to have around Prometheus in the same way that
is Deckard a replicant.
That's the moot point.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting that Ridley Scott is behind both of those movies, you know, that in one movie, in his final cut, he decides to include information that leads you to believe that Deckard is a replicant. And in Prometheus, he decides to exclude information that would perhaps allow you to connect some more dots. Because I think Blade Runner, you know, one of the other reasons maybe people latch on to this discussion is that it's a surface discussion, and so it's easy to have a conversation around it, and there's, you don't have to dig real deep.
Yeah.
To have that conversation, you know.
It's basically posed to you by the movie, you know. Exactly. So it's the movie outright saying,
right.
Here's what we're going to say. What do you think of this?
Yeah.
Whereas some of the other themes are just sort of there, mm-hmm. and you have to kind of create those questions for yourself.
Well, and in the case of Prometheus, the Jesus thing was people sort of theorized this before Scott admitted it.
Right.
And so it's one of those things that you could find on your own, you know, mm-hmm. the clues were there in Prometheus.
If you wanted to make that story
work,
fit that way,
it did.
You could do it. Yeah. If you fill in the information yourself and say this point A got to point B through this way, then you could do that. It would work. Yeah.
So it's sort of like damned if you do, damned if you don't, I guess, at the end with that, you know, approach for Ridley Scott, sort of like, if he doesn't give him enough information, you know, he doesn't get cut any slack. And if he does give him enough information, people are like, well, you spelled it out for me. Right?
Well, maybe. I mean, he's still... I think if you are actively engaged in the movie, mm-hmm. I don't think you can come away from Blade Runner asking questions about whether Deckard is a robot or not.
Right.
I think you can be actively engaged in Prometheus.
Yeah. And, oh yeah.
And
absolutely.
Still not have a clue what is going on, literally what is going on. I think figuratively and in a thematic sense, I think you can draw things from Prometheus without.
They are such opposites in that way.
Yeah.
You can, because you flip that, and you can literally tell what's going on in Blade Runner
mm-hmm.
pretty much the whole way through.
Right, yeah, everything makes
but
sense.
Figuratively, you're like, what is going on? Why are we here? Why is this important?
Yeah.
Why am I... I don't know why we're doing this.
Why are they playing the piano?
Yeah.
Why is he asleep? Yeah. Speaking of which, I guess to sort of pull back to Blade Runner.
Yeah, let's get back to
it. I love, this is a scene that I hadn't really paid much attention to in previous viewings, but it's funny that you mentioned how you fell asleep, because I have fallen asleep so many times watching this movie. It's a very drowsy movie.
It is.
And the scene where Rachel is at Deckard's apartment.
Yeah.
He rides up in the elevator and she surprises him.
Yeah. Hey,
and,
what's up?
You know, he says, okay, come in or whatever. And he basically confronts her with the fact that she is a robot.
Yes,
she doesn't want to believe that.
He's like, guess what?
Yeah.
I'm about to ruin your world.
Oh, hey, it's the robot lady who doesn't think she's a robot. That's about as much tact as
it is. Yeah.
So that scene, it goes on for like 20, 25 minutes, mm-hmm. you know, and ultimately it's a love scene, and it's the most protracted and awkward love scene. And I think it's fantastic.
Does it end with him assaulting her?
No. He does. He chases her down. Yeah.
He forces her to do things.
He holds her against her will
and tells her to kiss him.
Yes.
I mean, he forces her to kiss him.
I don't know. Well, I don't know if it's a force.
She doesn't want to initially.
Really? You think so?
I mean, just from body language, from the fact that he's holding her in place.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess.
I mean, and I would say, let's say you walk into that situation.
Okay, yeah, you probably...
You'd be like, hey, get off of her.
Yeah, you would be like, listen, asshole.
Yeah, because she doesn't want to kiss you.
That's a good point.
I mean, in the context of the movie, perhaps we're a little more lenient on Deckard because she's a robot, or because, you know, maybe we think less of her. But I had a hard time with that. Like, forgiving that, and then also believing, well, I had a hard time with their relationship overall.
It's a challenge.
But go on.
Well,
go on.
I guess
I didn't mean to like.
No, what I would say is I think she, having seen the movie and knowing ultimately where their characters go,
yeah,
it's a little easier to take that.
She's inhibited.
Yes.
She doesn't.
She's very timid.
She doesn't want to give in to perhaps her desires, what her desires are.
Right. Yeah, right, yeah. So, she may have some attraction to him. It's not evident at that moment.
No.
But ultimately, in the course of that scene,
yeah.
it
Stockholm Syndrome
something
takes
right,
over.
Yeah.
And sorry.
I like the idea that like maybe she isn't a robot, but Deckard like it's part of this weird submissive thing that he's got. He does this to all women.
Or I like that he's a replicant, but she's not.
Yeah.
In the final analysis.
Oh, the final cut. Yeah. Came up in this viewing. Do you think that Deckard has been around as long as it seems like he's been around? Mm. Or do you think he was manufactured specifically for this purpose, for the purposes of what we see in the movie of him hunting down these other replicants?
Hmm.
I need to watch it again with that question in mind, I think, before I say conclusively. But I found it interesting that...
If I'm looking at it logically, right, pure logic, I would say he was manufactured for the sole purpose to get these other replicants.
These specific replicants.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm leaning toward now.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought of that until this time.
Well, and I was just thinking... They say at the beginning of the movie he's the best Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
And who better to catch replicants than another replicant, right?
Right.
Who's going to think like them?
Who can physically withstand
right.
what they're going to do?
Yeah.
I think it's also interesting that we don't see him until after the guy giving the test, whatever
right.
his name is.
Yeah.
Who he's supposedly the best or whatever.
Oh, is he?
Deckard even says when the chief comes and pulls him in and he's like, we need you to find these guys. He's like, give them to what's his face. And they're like, we did. He's dead now. I think it's interesting. We don't see Deckard until after
that
point.
True.
So it's conceivable that, you know,
he was made.
That guy died and they're like, okay, now we need another replicant.
If that is the case. Hmm. So he goes to talk to, what's the guy's name that makes the
Terrell.
Terrell.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to talk to Terrell, and Terrell's like, I want to see if your test works, and basically outs Rachel. Do you think Terrell's actually testing
Deckard?
Deckard?
Yeah, I think so.
That he's like, I want to see if this thing I made is really good.
Yeah. And I think he also wants to see he's
sort of perverse.
He's testing the limits of.
Well, it's a Turing test.
Yeah, yeah.
He's essentially doing a Turing test with two computers.
Yeah.
If that is the case.
Yeah.
He is seeing if a computer can tell that it's talking to a computer.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. He's a twisted dude, Terrell is.
Yeah.
And I love the way that he's portrayed.
My favorite part of that scene is when Deckard walks in and Rachel sort of approaches him. Mm-hmm. He's looking at the owl or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think she says something like, do you like our owl? I thought that was a great line.
It is great, yeah. There are so many... The thing I love about this movie, too, that I was thinking about on this viewing is how little dialogue there is, how so spare it is. Like, it is bare bones.
It is a chore. I mean, and this is the thing. This is my struggle with the movie. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, part of it is what I'm used to from films now, right? Mm-hmm. What I've been conditioned with, especially with the current state of films. It is, Blade Runner is so lugubrious and so spare, and there's so little dialogue, and there's so much waiting, there's so much like just lingering on things, and like it is, you have to prime yourself for that.
Yeah.
Which is another reason that first viewing is so hard. Mm-hmm. I think
you're never really quite ready to watch that movie. I'm seriously, like, there is no good way to introduce yourself to Blade Runner.
Right,
you literally have to, you have to almost write that first viewing off.
It's,
I think,
like,
in a lot of ways,
coffee and, or beer.
Yeah, yeah. You. It's an acquired taste.
The first time's gonna be bad, or you're gonna like aspects of it, but
right. It's gonna be challenging. The first time you see it is gonna be challenging.
Well, and there's something I recently read about. No, I watched a video about it. There's some effect. There's a name for it, and I can't remember what it is. That you take pride in completing something that is hard to complete.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of times it's attributed to James Joyce's Ulysses. James Joyce's Ulysses.
Oh, right.
In that no one really likes reading it.
But you feel like you're part of a club or something.
You feel pride that you read it.
Yeah.
You're like, ooh, I got through that.
Yeah.
And it was hard to get through, but I did. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a sense of satisfaction in that, even if you didn't enjoy it. I mean, and I kind of got that from Blade Runner, where I was like, I didn't really like watching that movie, but I'm kind of proud that I watched it, you know, that I got through it. So I think that... I forget why that even came up.
Well, just because we were saying how it takes
how difficult,
to get. Yeah. Okay. No, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go.
Well, I was just gonna. I wanted to throw you this.
I'll try to catch it.
So, what about the alleged aspiration of Ridley Scott to make another Blade Runner movie?
Right. Right. That is exactly what I was going to bring up.
It's terrifying.
It is. I don't have a problem with sequels.
Right.
In general. Some people really just think there's no point to a sequel. Mm-hmm. I think as long as there's a story to be told, and if it makes sense to tell it with an established world and established characters, if there's more to tell in that world, then to me, I have no problem with a sequel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a sequel, like any movie, whether it's for, you know, the first or the second in a series, it's all going to hinge on execution, right? So I don't believe in the sequels are always bad thing either. I don't know what else there is to tell in the Blade Runner.
Right.
You
can do it in the Blade Runner world, but it's hard to find.
Well, certainly, yes, you could do it in the Blade Runner world, but that movie is so singular and so, like, such a statement, whether I like the statement or not.
Right.
I don't understand why you would want to say anything else other than that. What I could see happening, and I don't think anyone would agree with me, is a remake from Roy's perspective and not from Deckard's.
Huh.
Because that is the only thing that I'm left wanting, is to understand Roy more. And that might come through on repeated viewings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I may have been so focused on the style and the pay, you know, all the surface things that were kind of bombarding me, that I was not paying attention enough to subtext and, you know, and story and stuff like that. So perhaps that will be answered for me when I watch it again.
Hmm.
And I do think I'll watch it again. But I don't, it really bothers me that there's this discussion about a sequel.
Yeah. I agree.
I don't. If anything, didn't Ridley Scott get his rocks off with Prometheus?
Yeah, I would think. Yeah, I mean, it's basically the blending of the two.
Yeah,
it's a great mix of the two. But I don't know.
What's he doing? He's so weird.
Well, he's old.
He is old. Yeah, he's he's like, I never completed Blade Runner. It's like, you did several versions of that movie. Leave it alone.
Leave it alone.
It's funny, though. I mean, it is a really... the more I think about Blade Runner, the more I like it in a weird way. And that's because I keep thinking about it.
Yeah.
I couldn't just write it off. I couldn't finish the movie and just be like, I didn't like it. And walk away. Part of that is the final scene with Roy that is beautiful and... is one of the best things I've seen in a film.
Yeah.
Ever. But it's also because it was so strange and it was so unlike anything else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And part of what works is, I think part of what works is that there's so much that is familiar in the movie. Familiar as science fiction tropes, or familiar as storytelling. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, there's so much familiarity, but it's so weird and it's so unfamiliar at the same time that I'm just sitting here like, I've got to watch it again because I don't, you know, I need to make sense of that.
Yeah. I'm ready. And let's watch it again.
That's good. The other thing that I should bring up, that I knew but didn't know. What's the word I'm looking for? Well, so Red Dwarf, the British sci-fi sitcom that's been running since the 80s, intermittently, comes back every few years. Recently, in the past three or four years, they did a special, Red Dwarf Back to Earth, and it was like I think two-hour episodes, basically, of the series. And quick, for those who don't know, Red Dwarf is a show about these people on a mining spaceship. There is a cataclysmic event on the spaceship that kills everyone on the crew except for one person. And that person's in a stasis field. And it stays in there for 3 million years. And when he wakes up, everyone's dead. And the only people with him are a hologrammatic version of the person he hates the most. A life form that evolved from his cat, which is called Cat. And later on in the series, an android type character, right? So the series would go off the air and come back on the air intermittently from the 80s up till now. And actually... the 10th season's about to air very soon this month in September. But anyway, recently they did this Back to Earth special and it's loaded with Blade Runner references.
Oh.
Like absurdly so that I didn't catch any of them because I'd never seen Blade Runner, but they're not even obscure. They're not even like, oh, I get it. You know, I see. It's like in your face, this is a Blade Runner reference. Like Cat is folding origami things through the whole movie and leaving them in places. They have a scene where the four of them are chased through a sort of Tokyo-esque kind of area and they crash through panes of glass. They confront their creator, in quotes, in a lavish bedroom, much like Terrell's bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, there's a scene where they're trying to get information about someone and they have a photo and Crichton, who's the android, does all these like enhance, you know, move forward, flip it, look in that reflection. You know, there's all this stuff that I'm like, and it's not very good, the whole... The Back to Earth thing was pretty disappointing, actually. And that made me like it less. But there's this weird blatant Blade Runner references. I was like, why is...
All of a sudden.
Yeah, like all they did was do Blade Runner with the Red Dwarf people.
So Ridley Scott doesn't need to make a sequel.
Yeah, exactly.
It's or a right remake. There. They've already done it.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it again. I will watch it again. I have to make sense of it.
All right, well, we better let you go do that.
All right, time to die.
Too bad she won't live. But then again, who does?